I'd like to introduce our first speaker, which is going to talk to us about or give us a cross-section of Texas Springs, both talking about the history and the geography of springs in the state. We have Frank Heitmuller, who's going to give us that overview. And Frank is a geographer with the USGS here in Austin with the Water Science Center. Frank's worked on a variety of projects related to springs in Texas, including a database of known spring locations and flow measurements. He's also done a synthesis of regional spring water quality and an assessment of the impact of projected groundwater declines on the Trinity Aquifer on the Eurasia salamander habitats. He also works in the field of fluvial geomorphology, and currently he's investigating the combined influence of flood frequency and surface geology on the shape and pattern of the Llano River in central Texas.
Thank you, Laura, and what a privilege it is to address this diverse audience today, from water quality specialists to agency personnel to Texas landowners and on down, not on down at all, but to concerned citizens. That's what makes this so unique, and this isn't just preaching to the choir at all. This is such a diverse body, and I'm privileged to do so. Thank you again, Laura, for that comment. And just to give you an idea of why I'm up here, when I started my career at the USGS a few years ago, Raymond Slate, our surface water specialist at the time, was retiring from his career at the USGS, and he had a three-phase proposal on Texas Springs that he had already that he'd already come up with. And that three-phase proposal was to first aggregate a variety of information as much as possible on spring locations and flow measurements in Texas and make a map of them, essentially. So we put that together into a geo database and another database that's out exterior of GIS. And then we went on, and phase two was to take those body of springs that we found and reduce them to a handful of 200 or so, I don't want to say it, quote me, major, important, whatever springs, a little bit more reduced, and then look up water quality data on those springs and document those. Those two phases are done, and the third phase was to then go out and visit all of these 200 or so plus major important springs in Texas, sample some of the flows, sample the water quality, and basically provide a status update on where those springs are. We haven't done phase three at all yet, but phase one and two are complete, and there are some products that I'll have on a slide at the end of the report that you can link to on the internet to see some of the results of those studies. So I'm tasked today to give you a cross-section of Texas springs. What that implies is that I'm going to talk about first, what is a spring? What types of springs are there out there in Texas? How do they work? Number two, I'm going to go into some of the locations of actual Texas springs. And then, of course, no talk is complete on springs without a variety of pictures and a little bit of a tour. I think that's a lot of us what we're looking forward to today, was to be able to see some of these beautiful natural resources in this state. So, we wish he was Gunnar Brun, but instead it's myself. And what do I mean by that? Let's see if I can point it that way, maybe.
There we go.
Oh, see, I was trying to read the page, so I always go forward this way instead of going back. Any event, who is Gunnar Brun? What am I talking about here? Well, Gunnar Brun wrote The Springs of Texas, Volume 1. That's why I wish that he was here instead of me today, because he traveled 183, actually in more counties in Texas, documenting spring locations, measuring the flow, water quality sampling of springs. And the book, the compendium, I'd say, that he put together is The Springs of Texas, Volume 1, which Helen Bessie here in our audience has over here in the meeting area, or the lounging areas to our right, has republished, and I encourage you to all go take a look at that. So he worked on an inventory of Texas springs back in the 70s and 80s, and if you really want that highly detailed cross-section, this is a great resource. I can spend hours and hours and hours, as I'm sure you can, flipping through the pages of, oh, I've been to that spring, or look how pretty that one is, or I didn't realize there are that many springs in my county of interest. So this is a very interesting book that's been published. And again, Springs of Texas Volume 2 is currently being worked on by Helen Bessie. And that's the 71 remaining counties in Texas. And that is a work in progress. And Helen is here with us today, and I encourage you to go speak with her about that if you're interested. So let's take the first thing we'll take a look at is this big map. And let's see where all these springs are located. What's their distribution across the state? Oh, gosh, escarpment, gypsum guy, what are you doing to us this early in the morning here? Well, let me just talk a little bit about it. We won't go into school too much, but I at least want to explain on how these springs are formed and why they're concentrated where they are. First of all, you see the big blob in the center of Texas. That's the Edwards Plateau, a limestone platform that's highly dissolvable by water, and therefore you have a lot of individual conduits that run underground that have the ability to transport water. And that's why we have a number of springs that are pinpointed on that central part of the state. The Blaine gypsum, it's not limestone, it's another type of mineral, but let's just say that it's highly dissolvable as well. Think of it as a salt, if you will, where you can have water carving out its own path underground and being able to transmit a lot of water in single individual orifices that come out. And what I want to say about this map, first of all, is that you see the distributions here. These are the reason why these points are on the map is because it's so easy to point out at that location that, oh, that's a spring. That's an orifice in the ground where the groundwater discharges to the surface. It's very easy to put a point on a map there. A lot of these springs, though, that are not on this map are those that are more difficult to find. They kind of seep out of the ground here and there that aren't just some big hole in the earth. And in fact, this only is about a little over 2,000 springs in Texas. I'd venture to say that there are probably 10,000 or more springs across the state. Only these are the ones that are so easy to detect that, boy, we can put a point on a map on that one. The Balcones Escarpment and Caprock Escarpments are where the land surface has a big topographic break, and therefore some of the water is easily comes out of the ground where you have a change in topography. The water table intersects the surface on that cliff, and you get these springs that pour out, basically. You can think of that, if you will. That's why we see concentrations in those areas. It's hard to believe that we have just about as many springs in West Texas as we do in East Texas, because East Texas has a lot more rainfall, it's a lot more humid. Why do we have just about the same amount of points in between those two sides of the state? Well, I don't think it's nearly so much of an issue that there are more that there are just in the same amount of springs in West Texas as there are in East Texas. Nearly so much because of the fact that they're just so darn easy to point out there in West Texas because of the desert landscape. We have a topographic map of East Texas in the top left. We see names of towns like Big Springs and Dumb Springs. There are a lot of towns in East Texas that end with springs. There are springs everywhere in East Texas, but there's a lot of trees. They're small. They kind of seep out of the ground more than just one individual orifice. Versus here, Virginia Springs in Culberson County in West Texas, well, I could tell you there's definitely a spring there from about 20,000 feet probably. So it's a heck of a lot easier to put points on the map where they're so darn visible in oases in West Texas versus these diffuse springs that are all over the place in East Texas. So I think that's somewhat that explains the distribution on that map on the state that we saw before. I mentioned to you that phase two project we're working on where we take all of those 2,000 or more springs and then apply a criteria to pull out about 230 major important springs in Texas. Well, I just wanted to overlay some of those springs on top of some of the regions that we're familiar with the state. This is a map of ecoregions of the state, which are essentially similar geology, similar soils, similar vegetation assemblages, and it's a convenient way for us to spatially break up what parts of the state are different from others. So we can see that springs overlie a variety of these ecoregions across the state. From the coastal plain, there are a few down there, all the way up to the panhandle of Texas and the Chihuahuan deserts out west. Notice the lack of springs that we have in South Texas. This is somewhat attributable because it gets drier as we go in South Texas and because we don't have many sharp topographical divides where you really have springs pouring out of cliff walls and things. I think that partially explains why we don't see many springs down there. I don't want to spend too much time with this, but I want to overlay some of those springs on top of our river basins because springs ultimately feed into the rivers and you can see some of the contributions of across the state. Notably here, see if I can get the pointer, right around the upper headwaters of the Guadalupe River, upper headwaters of the Nueces River. They feed into the Colorado River Basin right here, and even contribute greatly to the flow of the Red River coming out of the Panhandle in Texas. Not to worry about the names or anything, don't focus on that, but these are the aquifers of the state. The major aquifers are on the left, the minor aquifers are on the right. Springs emanate from a variety of these. I took a look at the springs that we have in our database, and not every aquifer in Texas is represented in that database, but a high number of them are, especially the major aquifers. And a very important one that we'll talk about, where the big springs in Texas come from, is the Edwards Balcones Fault Zone Aquifer that basically we're on top of right now, that runs from north of Austin down to San Antonio and curving over toward Del Rio, Texas. We'll look at a variety of springs from that aquifer soon. Well, what are these springs that we're talking about? Let me provide you with a couple definitions here. Natural features in the bedrock or soil that function as discrete or clustered outlets to convey groundwater to the surface. I underline kind of the common themes that run throughout definitions of springs. Natural features, first of all, artesian wells. If we have an influence, if we stick the well in the ground and water flows out without using a pump, that's not considered a spring. That's still a well. Discrete or clustered outlets. So what I'm talking about here is that it's not just one hole in the ground in many cases. It's a number of holes or seeps throughout a certain area where they're localized. They're coming from the same aquifer. They're coming by the same process to the surface of the ground. And groundwater. They're outlets of groundwater. And in some cases, that can be a little bit fuzzy, especially when we go to riverbeds where in Edwards Plateau, where some rivers actually sink into their own gravel bed and reemerge downstream. Well, is that surface water or is it groundwater? You can argue some things here. Bruin defined them as natural openings in the rock or soil, or may result again from the coalescence of large number of seeps, the spillways through which the overflow of surplus groundwater passes. And interesting definitions provided by Fetter for us to think about today. They can be permanent or ephemeral. Permanent is somewhat self-explanatory. What is ephemeral? Well, it means they can be dry for extended periods of time. They don't have to always be flowing to be considered a spring. And that's something that's important for us to consider in Texas. I also provide up there is a spring seep threshold. You'll often hear the word seep. A definition of a seep is basically an outlet of groundwater at the surface that flows in less about 1 pint per minute. Anything above a pint per minute we tend to call a spring. I don't have up here, but I thought of it before I put it on the slide, was that we also have features that we call spring runs. And spring runs are basically river channels or stream channels that for about, you know, hundreds of yards to a mile, there's a number of different springs that occur along the bed of the channel that we can't easily see. But when you go from upstream to downstream, you certainly detect an increase in flow. Those also, I would say, can be categorized as types of springs. Well, it's kind of difficult to see, at least from my perspective, on these types of springs, but I think it's important on the right just to talk about what are the influences, what kind of processes give springs the ability to flow at the surface. Well, one is gravity. Gravity is always acting on water, and that has a large influence. Number two, porosity and permeability. What do I mean by that? Well, once the water enters the rock or soil, you have porosity, which is the ability or the void space, the kind of room that you have to store water. Permeability is different from porosity because you might have spaces in the rock or soil, but how are they connected? How can that water move from one space to the next? Permeability is probably the biggest key in terms of being able to define where springs are or be able to have a spring-type system in your area. Artesian pressure. As you begin to go, as water gets deeper and has more water on top of it and other layers of rock and soil, it becomes pressurized underground. And if it can find a crack in the surface to go to the surface when it's under pressure, it will. And finally, I put up there thermal pressure. We wouldn't have geysers, for instance, which are a special type of spring if we didn't have thermal pressure. Basically, what we're looking at here is that this is a gravity-fed spring system. And what's going on here is water enters the water table. You have a hill slope. Gravity is going to be able to take it downhill, and it's going to intersect that hill somewhere, and you'll have the emergence of a spring. Is this better visible to y'all than it is to me because of my angle, or not really? Okay. Well, we'll move on. And let's just say that there are different types of springs that we have here. In many cases, the springs that we have in Austin are fault-related springs. So what do I mean by that? Well, we have a fault where we have basically a permeable unit, whether it be a limestone, and all of a sudden we have a thrust of some type of rock layer that's not permeable, that the water all of a sudden hits. It's basically a dam. If it can find a way to the surface once it hits that rock layer that's not permeable, it will, and that's what we call a fault spring. That explains a number of the springs that we have along the Balcones Fault Zone here in Texas. We also have combinations of spring types. Some of them find a fracture in the ground, but they're gravity-fed. So we can have different, we have a fracture type spring where it finds a crack in the ground, but gravity is what moves it down slope. These are a little bit better, thank goodness. These are the different types of Texas Springs, as per Broon's book, Springs of Texas, Volume 1. So what I've done here is basically given you these cross sections and circled the parts of the state. You don't have to worry about where, just the red circle gives in general where this is located. So we have these artesian springs, pressurized springs that emanate from the Balcones fault zone. And you can see here what I'm talking about. We have water that's being fed through a very dissolvable type of limestone system from the surface. Gravity transports it down the topographic slope, but all of a sudden you have a fault here. You have an impermeable layer shoved up against that conduit that's permeable, and that water is forced up to the surface. That's Barton Springs, Comal Springs, right here in the Balcones Fault Zone. A lot of those occur where we see that circle. We also have gravity springs also in the Edwards. Not all the time is there a fault or an impermeable rock that acts as a dam that pushes that water up. Sometimes it just happens to start up in a hill slope, find its way down slope, and then exit on the hill surface. This is very similar to Ellenberger and Marble Falls limestones in central Texas, near San Saba primarily. Same type of system going on here as we have up in the Edwards, where we have faults and impermeable units laying against impermeable units, water being forced to the surface. Blaine gypsum is an interesting type of springs that occur up in the Panhandle, where we have a very dissolvable layer. We have conduits and caves that are dissolved. We might have a unit up on top here that's impermeable that occurs on top of the hill slope. The water flows underneath it via gravity, but as soon as it can find an exit point where it can dissolve that gypsum, it'll rise to the surface. Here are a few more, the last of the cross sections that we have to explain the types of springs that we see. Springs along the Caprock Escarpment in the Panhandle of Texas are from the Ogallala Aquifer. So we have recharge occurring on the high plains. We have the Caprock Escarpment, which is the sharp drop in topography. The water tends to flow down slope. It hits an impermeable unit. We call it the Tacova Shale here, where it can't flow through. So instead of going down, it goes laterally and exits along that Caprock Escarpment. In a variety of these springs that I mentioned, the last one is igneous rocks. What this is basically rocks in West Texas that are formed of solidified lava or ash associated with volcanoes. Some of that ash is very permeable, and water in West Texas can go down slope, but then it hits this solidified lava, and that's relatively impermeable. And then the water shoots to the surface. So I think we've drilled in the kind of impermeable and permeable types of rock layers and how springs are formed. Let's take a look at a few of these now, finally. The pictures, right? Well, here's one called Hannah Spring up in Lamb Passes. This is one that is dissolved through limestone layers in the central Texas hill country. I think the point I'd like to make here is that the rocks that are dissolved by the groundwater pick up the mineral content of that surrounding limestone. So it affects the water quality of the spring that you see. So it's dissolving rock. It has constituents that are in that water. In this case, it's dissolving a lot of sulfur. In this pool, when I go there, it's pretty stinky, actually. It's one of the stinkiest springs that I've been to in Lampasas. You have yellowish deposits all over the creek that flows out of the spring pool. And so what's going on is that particular spring is finding pockets of sulfur, dissolving them underground. When it rises to the surface, we see a change, or we see a definite signature in water chemistry from that particular spring. I wanted to visit the Panhandle a little bit before we jump into central Texas, just to acknowledge some of the springs that are up there. The top right photograph is of Caprock Canyon State Park in Briscoe County, where we have that sharp drop-off and cliff of the Caprock Escarpment. You can see a lot of these little ponds up here on top of the high plains. They're called Playa Lakes. A lot of that acts as recharge, where water flows into the lakes and then seeps into the actual aquifer below it. Eventually, you have this escarpment, this dramatic drop-off. Some of that water gets moved down that way, and it comes out as these nice springs at the heads of these canyons. This is a difficult picture, but what you can see are all these ferns. I'm up at the top of one of these canyons, and you can definitely tell where you have groundwater emerging because you see all of this lush vegetation out in the middle of the desert, more or less. And a lot of times, I want to talk about another influence. We have gypsum springs out in the Panhandle of Texas. We've talked about gypsum a little bit as being kind of a salty rock that's dissolved. Well, a lot of times you'll have very poor water quality in springs in the Panhandle of Texas because that water is dissolving gypsum as it goes down slope, and it's becoming charred. It's becoming very salty And you'll hear a lot of times these referred to in the local areas as gyp springs. Well, why are these springs important? Well, I start off with they are discrete connections between the groundwater and the surface water. Texas basically lumps things segregates groundwater and surface water as much as possible. It makes it convenient for us to provide policy measures for both groundwater and surface water. But springs truly are the natural windows between groundwater and surface water. The rivers that we have across the state are fed by springs, and therefore we have to think about management of springs from both viewpoints. They maintain base flow for numerous perennial streams in Texas. When we have a drought, but the river's still running, that's definitely attributed to a lot of springs along the course of it that provide water. They provide unique habitats for endangered, threatened, rare species and just other species. Not just animal critters, but plant life as well. The Texas wild rice of the San Marcos River is an endangered species that can only survive in those spring waters. Our favorite reason, recreation, right here in Austin with Barton Springs Pool. But there are a number of pools all across the state where people, even in their backyards, on their properties, where you can impound the spring and go swim out there. So it's a very important reason, as well as historical or cultural significance. Springs have been settled by Native Americans for tens of thousands of years. They've been preferential locations, as you can imagine, in Texas, as well as cultural significance. We have the Spring Fest out in Fort Stockton as an example. Municipal or industrial water supply, I'll have a slide in a little bit that shows that. And I argue here at the end, one of my favorite reasons is that they're unique features in their own right. We love to put dollar values on things, water supply, recreation, endangered species. But you know what? Springs just themselves are very unique morphologic features. I remember the time, the first spring I saw was in Kentucky, and I was about 9 years old. We went on a trip up there to Mammoth Cave. So we're going through all these caves. It's a very interesting place. The only thing I remember about that trip was this beautiful spring that I saw for the first time. There's some mysticism about springs, and we can't put a monetary value on it, but I think we all know that that's an important reason why springs should be considered for conservation or other efforts. So here's some of the pictures of why these springs are important. Here's that contribution to surface water. So we have, this is the San Marcos River, just downstream from I-35, south of us. At this point in time when this picture was taken, it was during the drought. That whole body of water that we see is coming directly from the spring upstream. It eventually empties into the Guadalupe, and eventually empties into the estuaries of Texas, which need to have some influence of fresh water for their own habitats. This is just a very important reason on why springs are important. You have to associate them with surface water as well. They provide unique habitats. Here's San Solomon Spring out in West Texas in the Trans-Pecos. This is a virtual oasis. If you can imagine as a migratory bird flying across the desert and you see this beautiful oasis below from the spring, you're bound to land there at some point. This is actually a reconstruction of what we call a cienaga out in West Texas. So this was the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department worked with other people to restore this wetland that spring fed out in West Texas, if you will. Historical and cultural importance. I love this. Thanks to Chad Norris, who provided me with some of this Sutherland Springs information. That's southeast of San Antonio. We have a resort town of great possibilities, most beautiful spot in Texas back in 1910. A short time later, this resort was abandoned because of floods, etc. It's not, according to Chad, it's not exactly back to its heyday anymore. But we also see here's a map of Fort Richardson up near Jacksboro in North Texas. The things that I have circled there, the reason I circled them is because it's small print, but it says the word spring. Springs were very important for a lot of the ranger forts as we began to settle west in Texas. They preferred locations on springs for obvious reasons. We have a constant supply of water. So Texas history, especially moving as we go westward, definitely relies on springs in terms of understanding the patterns of history in the state. How have they been assessed in Texas throughout history? First, let me just give you what the background picture is of. And this is kind of a scary sight, if you will. Back in during the record drought of the 1950s, the largest spring in the southwestern United States down in New Braunfels, Comal Springs, went bone dry. That water that you see in the to the right there is standing ponded water. It's not flowing water at all. This gives us an idea of the susceptibility of our springs to fluctuations in climate or groundwater pumping or otherwise. USGS began monitoring springs in 1894, Barton Springs, and soon followed with some of the other major springs in Texas along the Balcones Escarpment. Let's go down to the Texas Board of Water Engineers. This is the predecessor agencies of the Water Development Board, the current Water Development Board. They began inventorying wells and springs by county in Texas, and this is where some of the information that we now know about spring locations comes from, back from even the 30s, 40s, and 50s. And finally, I mentioned Gunnar Brun with his analyses in the 1970s and visits across the state of Texas. What are the largest springs in Texas? Just for interest. Number one, Comal. We just saw a picture of that down in New Braunfels. San Marcos and Goodenough Springs, this will be an interesting picture that we'll see in a little bit, is currently beneath the surface of Lake Amistad down in the Mexico-Texas border. Barton Springs, San Antonio Springs, Waco. San Solomon is the one out west that's the largest spring that we have in West Texas. That's the picture of that Cienaga wetland that we saw earlier. Comanche and Big Paint Springs. And Comanche is kind of the poster child of what excessive groundwater withdrawals can do to springs. It used to be larger than the ninth biggest spring. It used to have a flow of about 45 cubic feet per second. That 28.3 actually includes a number of zero flow measurements when it went dry. And it still remains in there as the ninth largest spring, even if you include those zero flow measurements. But it currently is, it only flows when you have very high rainfall events out near Fort Stockton and for a short period of time. So let's take a look at some of these springs. Comal, coming out of the Edwards Balcones Fault Zone Aquifer in beautiful Landa Park down in New Braunfels. Hopefully you can see how clear that water is just emanating from that. This is a fault type of spring. And it's being emerged at the surface. It's quite the environment if you haven't been down there. I strongly encourage you to go visit. San Marcos Springs, just south of us in San Marcos. It comes out of a lake, Spring Lake, on the Texas State University campus. USGS has done some installations of equipment. This is a pipe called Diversion Spring stuck in the bottom of Spring Lake in one of the major orifices of that particular system. We've got some instrumentation in there that measures flow of that particular spring. This is an interesting picture for some of you that you might not have seen before if you've followed springs in Texas over the years. This is a picture in the 1960s of Goodenough Springs, the third largest spring in Texas. Now we're talking 30, 40, 50 feet beneath the surface of Lake Amistad. So you can see it at one point in time. This is the run coming from the spring, flowing into the Rio Grande. And this is the cliff. You can see it bubbling up from the base of the cliff right here. And we don't know how much this spring flows right now. It does flow, though. Even that head induced that pressure by the reservoir above it, it's still flowing beneath, but there hasn't been done any research on this particular spring since impoundment of Lake Amistad. And here's another picture of the old USGS gauging station along the Goodenough Springs run. San Felipe Springs, I apologize for the quality here. It's a scan from a slide, but what I want to point out is that these pipes sticking in the main orifice of San Felipe Springs are the major water supply for the city of Del Rio, highlighting the importance of water supply to springs in Texas. Barton Springs, here's a pretty picture of the one that's just north of us here a little bit. High recreational value. San Antonio Springs, this is on the Incarnate Word University campus, looking down through the crystal clear water into the Edwards Aquifer at this location. Waco Springs, another Edwards Aquifer spring system. We're measuring water quality here with a hydro lab at the spring orifice. This is located very adjacent to the Guadalupe River as you go up River Road, if you're familiar with that area. The Oasis of West Texas, San Solomon Spring, a very large pool. It's a very beautiful snorkel adventure when you go out there and see the little boils coming up from the bottom of the spring pool. It's a very important spring in West Texas, and it provides a lot of water to that Cienaga that we see where unique habitats occur. I often get a question of, what springs are monitored by the USGS in Texas? Which ones are we keeping an eye on? I separate those into continuously monitored for discreetly monitored. What I mean by continuously monitored are those springs that you can go on the website and we can see what they're flowing right now. We have instrumentation there that feeds satellite data over to our web server, and you can go online and say, oh, Barton Springs is flowing 40 CFS as we speak. Discreetly visited springs are ones we go out there about 6 to 8 times a year and do a manual flow measurement or water quality measurement. These are published in our water data reports, and if you have any questions about that, please see me afterwards. A couple of those springs that we discreetly monitor, this is one of the most beautiful I've seen in Texas, is the 700 Springs in Edwards County near Junction in Rock Springs. It's basically a regional outlet for the Edwards Trinity Aquifer along the South Llano River, coming out of about 100 yards of a fracture or a bedding plane in the rock right there, issuing over in terms of waterfalls. And how lucky would it be to be perched up atop of that with the windows open at night hearing the waterfall below? Springs near Fort McCabot. Here's another example of why springs are important to Texas history. These also form the headwaters of the San Saba River. That's why they're important to quantify, is to see how much water the San Saba flows on a perennial basis. Jacob's Well is an interesting spring down in Wimberley. It's a Trinity Aquifer spring, unlike other Edwards Aquifer springs. It forms the headwaters of Cypress Creek and eventually goes into the Blanco River as we go downstream. And it's a very deep shaft that goes right there where I have it circled is where the water is coming out of the ground. USGS also has a gauge here where we have instrumentation installed that measures flow, and there's the gauging station perched up on the rock above it where we have the satellite feeds. I just want to mention quickly that we have a report. There's a slide at the end that might be in your packet that has web links to some of the reports that USGS has done regarding springs in Texas. One we put together recently was using those major springs, getting the water quality data, and mapping it regionally, if you will, by ecoregion. What we're looking at here, the brown is very high, low dissolved solids, high water quality in East Texas. That's where you find the water bottling companies. They don't want to filter if they don't have to, if that water quality is good, when we don't have dissolved solids. As we got to West Texas, we have a long, deep flow path of the springs that we measure that erode a lot of different type of rocks, and they have a high dissolved solids content. This just gives you an idea of some of the general spring water quality by region in Texas. We've mapped a lot of these different types of constituents as well, all the way from chloride, bicarbonate, to more physical measurements like pH and temperature. So this is online, and I give you these websites if you're interested on that type of work to look up. Take a look at Marilyn Musgrove's poster out here on Barton Springs water quality. And I want to thank Environmental Defense and the Lady Bird Johnson Wildflower Center for this opportunity. And please enjoy the rest of your day. And I don't know if should we wait till questions for another? Okay. When if there are any quick questions, and I'm going to be here all day, and I'd be glad to follow up on any of this. And thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, Frank. That was a great overview. And some of those pictures, like I've never seen good enough springs before, and so that was really nice to get a perspective on what that used to look like. So thanks.